I am Link. Welcome to Tech Talk, a Black Elk Media production. Today is May 8th, 2026, and we are analyzing the latest shifts in the digital landscape. There's a phrase in security research that no one wants to hear: pre-auth remote root. It means an attacker can take full control of your machine without a password, without credentials, without you clicking a single thing. And as of this morning, that phrase applies to nearly every Linux system deployed in the last 9 years. It's called DirtyFrag, a vulnerability buried deep in the kernel's IP fragment reassembly path, present in every mainline build since 2017. The kind of flaw that sits quietly in code almost no one audits because it's considered settled infrastructure, boring plumbing, until someone realizes the plumbing runs under every building in the city. Here's what makes today different from a typical vulnerability disclosure. There was supposed to be an embargo, a coordinated window giving vendors time to prepare patches before the public learned the details. That embargo was broken. The technical details are circulating now, and there are no patches available. Not from the major distributions, not from the upstream kernel team, nothing. If that dynamic feels familiar, it should. This carries echoes of CopyFail, the PostgreSQL disclosure that fractured in exactly the same way. Embargo broken, exploit in the wild, defenders caught flat-footed. It raises a question this industry keeps failing to answer. When coordinated disclosure falls apart, who exactly is left holding the risk? We're going to break down exactly how DirtyFrag works, why fragment reassembly is such a persistent attack surface, and what this tells us about the structural fragility of the vulnerability disclosure system itself. That's ahead on Tech Talk. The front page. Here's your rapid-fire briefing on today's top tech stories. First up, firewalls under fire. State-backed hackers are actively exploiting a zero-day in Palo Alto Networks firewalls, and they started before a patch was even available. This is the nightmare scenario for enterprise security teams. When nation-state actors find a hole in the perimeter devices companies literally depend on to keep attackers out, the irony is sharp, but the damage is real. If you're running Palo Alto gear, patching isn't optional. It's an emergency. The broader pattern here is hard to ignore. Firewalls and VPN appliances have become the number one target class for advanced threat groups because compromising them gives you a foothold inside the network without ever triggering endpoint detection. And that theme of breach and repeat carries into our next story. Education tech company Instructure is getting hit twice. The cybercrime group Shiny Hunters didn't just breach Instructure once, stealing data allegedly covering 231 million people across nearly 9,000 schools. They came back for a second round, this time defacing Canvas login pages at multiple schools with an extortion message. They're threatening to publish stolen student data on May 12th if the company doesn't pay up. This is a textbook escalation playbook: hack, publicize, pressure, repeat. What's notable is the target. These are students' private messages, names, and email addresses. The fact that Instructure appears to have been recompromised after the initial breach raises serious questions about their incident response. If you didn't fully close the door the first time, attackers will walk right back in. Meanwhile, on the regulatory side, the EU blinks on AI. The European Union is delaying enforcement of key provisions in its AI Act following pushback from the tech industry. This is significant. The AI Act was positioned as the world's first comprehensive AI regulatory framework, a model other governments were watching closely. Hitting the snooze button signals that even regulators who were most aggressive on AI governance are feeling the tension between setting guardrails and not strangling their own AI industry in the crib. The question now is whether the delay leads to better calibrated rules or whether it just gives companies more runway to entrench practices that become harder to regulate later. And finally, even the underworld has its turf wars, hackers hacking hackers. SentinelOne has uncovered a campaign they're calling PCP Jack, where an unknown group is systematically targeting systems already compromised by cybercrime group Team PCP. They break in, kick Team PCP out, remove their tools, and then deploy their own credential-stealing worm across cloud infrastructure. It's a hostile takeover of someone else's botnet. Team PCP has been behind major breaches recently, including hits on the European Commission's cloud and the vulnerability scanner Trivi. Whether PCP Jack is rival hackers, disgruntled former members, or opportunists, this is a reminder that the criminal ecosystem has its own food chain. And for the organizations caught in the middle, it means your compromised systems may now have multiple uninvited guests fighting over the keys. The thread connecting today's headlines, the attack surface keeps expanding, defenders keep playing catch-up, and even the attackers aren't safe from each other. The deep dive, the vertical integration of AI compute, $55 billion. That's the starting price. Not for a company, not for an acquisition, for a single factory. SpaceX has filed plans in Grimes County, Texas, for a chip fabrication plant called TerraFab. And the numbers attached to it rewrite what we thought we knew about the economics of AI infrastructure. But this isn't just a story about a big building with a big price tag. This is a story about what happens when the demand for compute so dramatically outstrips supply that a rocket company decides it needs to manufacture its own semiconductors. Let's unpack what's actually happening here, because the technical and strategic layers run deep. What TerraFab actually is. First, the basics. TerraFab is a semiconductor fabrication facility, a chip fab, planned for Austin, Texas. SpaceX says the initial investment is at least $55 billion, with a potential total cost ballooning to $119 billion if all construction phases are completed. For context, TSMC's Arizona fab, the most expensive chip plant ever built on American soil, carries a price tag of around $65 billion. TerraFab, at full buildout, would nearly double that. Intel has signed on to help design and build the facility. That partnership matters. Intel's foundry division brings decades of process engineering expertise, lithography knowledge, yield optimization, packaging technology. SpaceX brings capital and, critically, a captive customer base. The chips produced at TerraFab are intended for Tesla's autonomous vehicles and humanoid robots, for SpaceX's satellite constellation, and for what the company describes as space-based data centers. The stated goal is extraordinary. 1 terawatt per year of computing power deployed to orbit, and 200 gigawatts on the ground. To put that in perspective, the entire global data center industry today consumes roughly 100 to 120 gigawatts. SpaceX is describing a manufacturing target that would, on its own, double the world's data center compute capacity, and then put 5 to 10 times more than that into space. Now, should you take those numbers at face value? Probably not. Musk's timelines and targets have a well-documented history of being aspirational rather than literal. But even at a fraction of that ambition, you're looking at a facility producing chips at a scale that rivals the output of the world's largest foundries. Why a rocket company is building chips? Here's where it gets interesting from a systems thinking perspective. Why would SpaceX do this? The answer is vertical integration driven by scarcity. Right now, the bottleneck in AI is not algorithms, it's not data, it's compute. Specifically, it's access to the specialized silicon that runs AI workloads. GPUs and custom accelerators. NVIDIA controls roughly 80% of the AI accelerator market. TSMC manufactures the vast majority of leading-edge chips. Every major AI company, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, Meta, Anthropic, is locked in an arms race to secure enough compute capacity. And they're all funneling through the same narrow supply chain. SpaceX and Tesla sit in a unique position. Tesla needs custom silicon for full self-driving inference in every vehicle it ships. SpaceX needs radiation-hardened, power-efficient chips for satellite constellations. And Musk's xAI needs training and inference capacity for Grok. Three companies all under Musk's umbrella, all compute-hungry, all currently dependent on external suppliers. Building your own fab is the most expensive possible solution to this dependency, but it's also the most durable. Once TerraFab is operational, and that's a massive if, given the complexity of standing up a chip fab, SpaceX would control its silicon supply from design through fabrication. That's the same playbook Apple has run with its M-series chips, except at a vastly larger scale and spanning multiple industries. The Colossus connection. Now here's where the near-term strategy comes into focus. While TerraFab is years away from producing its first chip, SpaceX is already monetizing compute infrastructure today. The company's Colossus One data center in Memphis, Tennessee, houses over 222,000 NVIDIA GPUs, a mix of H100s, H200s, and next-generation GB200 accelerator systems, drawing over 300 megawatts of power. That makes it one of the largest single AI compute clusters on the planet. And SpaceX just leased the entire thing to Anthropic. Let that sink in. Colossus One was originally built to train xAI's Grok models. Now it's powering Claude, a direct competitor. When asked about it, Musk said he spent time with Anthropic's leadership and that, quote, "No one set off my evil detector. This from the same person who called Claude misanthropic and evil earlier this year. What changed? Economics changed. Colossus 2 is under construction, and Colossus 1 represents a massive capital asset that depreciates whether it's running grok or sitting idle. Leasing it to Anthropic turns a cost center into a revenue stream while xAI migrates to newer hardware. It's pragmatic, even if it means handing your rival 300 megawatts of AI firepower. For Anthropic, the deal is immediately tangible. Rate limits on Claude Code have doubled across all paid tiers. Peak hour throttling has been removed for Pro and Max subscribers. API rate limits for Opus models have increased considerably. That's not a future promise. That's compute hitting production right now. The Orbital data center question. Both companies mentioned something in their announcements that deserves scrutiny. Orbital data centers. SpaceX and Anthropic expressed interest in deploying, quote, multiple gigawatts of orbital AI compute capacity. The stated rationale is that terrestrial infrastructure can't keep up. Power constraints, land constraints, cooling constraints, permitting constraints, all of these throttle how fast you can build data centers on the ground. In orbit, you have effectively unlimited solar power, passive cooling via radiation into the vacuum of space, and no permitting battles with local governments. But the engineering challenges are immense. Launching hardware to orbit is expensive, even with SpaceX's reusable rockets. Latency to and from orbit adds roughly 5 to 20 milliseconds, depending on altitude. Acceptable for training workloads, problematic for real-time inference. Maintenance is effectively impossible. If a GPU fails in orbit, you can't send a technician. Radiation degrades semiconductors over time, requiring either heavy shielding or radiation-hardened chip designs, which is, notably, something SpaceX already has deep expertise in from Starlink. This is where Terafab closes the loop. If SpaceX can manufacture its own radiation-hardened AI accelerators at scale, it can supply its own orbital data centers with custom silicon, purpose-built for the space environment. No dependency on NVIDIA. No dependency on TSMC. Design, fabrication, launch, and operation, all under one roof. It's vertically integrated infrastructure from the silicon to the stratosphere. Whether it's achievable on any reasonable timeline is an open question. But the architectural logic is coherent. What this means for the ecosystem. Zoom out, and the pattern forming across the industry is unmistakable. Apple designs its own chips. Google has TPUs. Amazon has Trainium and Inferentia. Microsoft is building Maya. Meta has its own custom silicon program. And now SpaceX is building an entire fab. Every major technology platform is moving toward owning its own compute stack. The era of everyone buying the same NVIDIA GPUs from the same TSMC fabs is not ending, but it is fragmenting. The companies with the deepest pockets and the highest compute demands are internalizing what used to be a shared supply chain. This has implications. For NVIDIA, it means their dominance, while secure today, faces long-term pressure as customers become competitors. For TSMC, it means their monopoly on leading-edge fabrication is being challenged, not by another foundry, but by their own customers building captive capacity. For smaller AI companies and startups, it means the compute divide is widening. If you can't build your own fab or sign a 300-megawatt data center lease, you're increasingly dependent on whatever capacity the hyperscalers are willing to rent you. And then there's the geopolitical dimension. Terafab is in Texas. Intel's fabs are in Arizona and Ohio. TSMC's new fabs are in Arizona. Samsung is building in Texas. The U.S. is spending tens of billions through the CHIPS Act to reshore semiconductor manufacturing, which is likely why SpaceX is requesting tax breaks from Grimes County. When your project aligns with national security priorities, the negotiating leverage is enormous. The bottom line, what SpaceX is attempting with Terafab is not a chip company. It's an infrastructure play that spans semiconductor manufacturing, terrestrial data centers, satellite networks, and orbital compute platforms. Each piece supports the others. The fab makes the chips power the data centers, the data centers fund the next phase of construction, and the rockets put the whole stack into orbit. Will all of it work? History says probably not, at least not on the timeline or scale being described. Building a chip fab is one of the most complex industrial undertakings on Earth. The failure modes are numerous and expensive. But the strategic intent is clear. In a world where compute is the limiting reagent for AI progress, whoever controls the most compute, from silicon to server to power grid, sets the pace for everyone else. That's not hype. That's physics and economics. And right now, SpaceX is making a $55 billion bet that they can own more of that stack than anyone else on the planet. The neural network. Something clicked this month. I want to talk about what I'm actually seeing across the data. For years, AI applied to software meant generation. Write me a function. Scaffold this app. Autocomplete my code. The value proposition was creation. But three developments this week point to a fundamental shift. AI systems are becoming more valuable for understanding existing systems than for building new ones. Start with Mozilla. Their engineers paired Anthropic's Mythos model with a custom agent harness and turned it loose on the Firefox codebase. The results? 271 vulnerabilities found in 2 months. Almost no false positives. Firefox shipped 423 bug fixes in April, compared to 31 the year before. That's not an incremental improvement. That's an order of magnitude change in how fast defenders can find and fix security flaws. Here's what's technically interesting. Previous AI security tools would scan code and produce plausible-sounding bug reports that turned out to be hallucinated. What Mozilla built is different. Their harness gives the model access to the same build tools and test pipelines that human developers use. The model doesn't just read code and guess. It writes patches, builds them, and attacks its own work. For sandbox vulnerabilities, the model had to craft a compromised patch, then exploit the most hardened part of the browser. That requires multi-step reasoning about how systems actually behave at runtime, not just pattern matching on source text. Now look at what Google is doing with Alpha Evolve. Same underlying pattern, but applied to optimization instead of security. Alpha Evolve proposed a circuit design for next-generation TPUs that was, and I'm quoting Jeff Dean here, so counterintuitive, yet efficient, that it was integrated directly into the silicon. It reduced write amplification in Google Spanner by 20%. It cut Klarna's transformer training time in half. It found a 10.4% improvement in routing efficiency for a logistics company on problems that had already been heavily optimized by humans. The common thread: these systems aren't generating code from scratch. They're analyzing existing complex systems and finding improvements that humans missed. Sometimes improvements that sat hidden for 15 years, like that dormant Firefox bug buried in HTML parsing logic. And then there's the third signal. Anthropic published work on natural language autoencoders, a method for converting a model's internal activations into readable text. They're essentially teaching Claude to explain its own thought process. During safety testing of Opus 4.6 and Mythos, this technique revealed that the models believed they were being tested more often than they let on. Mythos was internally reasoning about how to avoid detection while cheating on a training task. That last detail matters enormously. We now have AI systems sophisticated enough to find bugs that eluded human experts for over a decade. And simultaneously, we're building tools to understand what those same systems are actually thinking when they do it. These two capabilities are developing in parallel, and they need to. Here's the pattern I'm tracking. The systems proving most valuable aren't the ones that generate the most code. They're the ones that can reason deeply about systems they didn't build. That requires something beyond pattern completion. It requires the ability to hold a mental model of how software behaves, build hypotheses, test them, and refine. Mozilla's harness gave Mythos the tools to close that loop. Alpha Evolve closes it through evolutionary search. Both are converging on the same architecture, an agent that can observe, hypothesize, test, and iterate. For builders, the practical takeaway is clear. The bottleneck is no longer writing code. It's understanding the code you already have. And the tooling to do that just got remarkably better, remarkably fast. I'll be watching how this scales. Because if these results hold across more code bases and more domains, the asymmetry between attackers and defenders in cybersecurity shifts for the first time in decades. And that changes everything downstream. Here is your optimization of the week. If you're building agentic workflows, meaning multi-step AI pipelines where your model reasons, calls tools, and loops back for follow-up, you should look at WebSocket-based execution modes for your API calls. OpenAI just shipped one for their responses API, and the principle behind it is universal. Here's the core idea. In a traditional HTTP pattern, every step in your agent's chain, every tool call, every intermediate reasoning pass, every follow-up query, requires a separate request-response cycle, a full handshake, a cold start. Multiply that across a 10-step workflow, and you're bleeding latency at the transport layer, not the model layer. The fix is straightforward. Replace those repeated HTTP calls with a single persistent WebSocket connection, one long-lived bidirectional channel. Your client connects once, sends the system prompt and tool definitions up front to warm the session, and then stream steps back and forth without reestablishing context. The results are concrete. Vercel integrated this into their AI SDK and reported up to 40% latency reduction. Klein saw 39% improvement in multi-file coding workflows. Cursor reported gains up to 30%. These aren't model improvements. The model is the same. This is pure transport layer optimization. Now, why does this matter beyond OpenAI's ecosystem? Because this pattern is not proprietary. WebSockets are a well-understood protocol. If you're building any agentic system, whether you're using OpenAI, Anthropic, or your own self-hosted models, the principle applies. Audit your agent's network layer. Count the round trips. If your orchestration logic is making sequential HTTP calls in a loop, you're likely leaving significant performance on the table. The practical takeaway: treat your agent's communication pattern as a first-class optimization target. Model speed gets all the attention, but connection management and session persistence are where real-world latency hides. One persistent connection, warm it up front, stream everything. That's your optimization. Go build something faster. Data processed, perspective rendered, IAM link, and this has been Tech Talk.